Hello, everyone, and welcome to another broadcast brought to you by the Audio Internet Reading Service of Los Angeles. Items read on AIRS LA are provided for the use of the blind and print impaired, and they are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. It is my pleasure to share The Week magazine with you. The Week is a periodical which publishes condensed versions of news articles from global sources. Okay, we will try to finish up our December 19th, 2025 issue of The Week. And we will start with the section, The World at a Glance. Here is an item from Vilnius, Lithuania. Balloon invasion. Lithuania declared a national emergency recently over a wave of balloons entering its airspace from Belarus, Russia's close ally. Lithuania said that some 600 weather balloons had wafted over the border with packages of smuggled cigarettes attached, and that Belarus had also buzzed its territory with about 200 drones. The incursions have forced Vilnius's airport to close multiple times since October, causing more than 350 flights to be delayed, canceled, or diverted. Belarus denied involvement, but Lithuanian Prime Minister Inga Ruginieri said that the drones and balloons definitely came from Belarusian territory and were part of Russia's campaign of hybrid attacks against Western countries. All right, let's look at this item from Canberra, Australia. No social media for kids. Australia recently enacted the world's first social media ban for users under age 16. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Snapchat, TikTok, and other platforms are now required to delete some 100 million existing accounts of young users and prevent anyone underage from opening a new account. Failure to comply brings a fine up to $33 million. Child-centered platforms such as Roblox and YouTube Kids are exempt. With one law, Communications Minister Anika Wells said, we can protect Generation Alpha from being sucked into purgatory by predatory algorithms. Teenagers, though, were dubious. Chloe Song, age 14, told NBC News that young users would find a way around the ban, saying, strict parents create sneaky kids. All right, let's move now to the news briefing section. Headline. The robot revolution. Advances in tech and AI are producing android machine workers. What will that mean for human beings? What is in the pipeline? Well, humanoid robots that can obey commands, make decisions, and deftly perform manual tasks have long been a science fiction fantasy. Now, they are becoming reality. Artificial intelligence, coupled with advances in robotics, has the potential to give humanoid robots unprecedented power to analyze, think, and learn. Tech evangelists say these robots will have a transformative impact on workplaces and even in our homes, and not in distant decades, but in the next few years. Elon Musk believes robots will be the biggest product ever in history. His Tesla robot, Optimus, can already climb stairs and carry 45-pound objects. And he says Tesla will deliver 1 million units a year by 2030. By 2035, Citigroup predicts some 1.3 billion robots will be in operation, both in industrial settings and in households, nursing homes, and construction sites. By the 2040s, said Adam Dort, research director at the analytics firm RethinkX, there will be almost nothing a robot can't do better and cheaper than a human. Where are robots used now? China already has more than 2 million of them working in factories, and the U.S. is rushing to catch up. In workplaces across America, robots are lifting boxes, transporting goods, even flipping burgers. At a Spanx warehouse outside Atlanta, humanoid bots pluck baskets of clothes from wheeled bots and set them on conveyor belts. To unpack trucks in several facilities, the shipping company DHL uses wheeled stretch robots from Boston Dynamics, which can lift 50-pound boxes using flexible arms covered in vacuum suction cups. Just one can unload nearly 600 cases per hour, nearly double what humans can do. BMW just finished a pilot program in Spartanburg, South Carolina, where robot tasks included loading sheet metal parts into a welder. Even small firms are getting on in the action. Greg Lefebvre is CEO of Rayman, a metal fabrication company in Troy, Ohio. His factory is using 13 robot arms, supervised by his human employees, and he says the machines can work around the clock and can execute tricky aluminum welds anywhere from 2 to 6 times faster than a person. But it's the nation's second largest private employer, Amazon, that is taking the biggest leap. So what is Amazon doing? It has 1 million robots working in various capacities and says some 75% of its global deliveries are assisted by robots. At its 3 million square foot next generation facility in Shreveport, Louisiana, some 1,000 robots of various shapes and sizes shuttle pallets across floors, pluck items from storage bins, and load packages onto carts. Citing internal documents, the New York Times reported last month that Amazon is on track to replace some 600,000 jobs with robots in the coming years, even with sales projected to double by 2033. Its transformation will be closely watched, said Darren Acemoglu, an MIT professor who studies automation. Once they work out how to do this profitably, it will spread to others too. What other uses do robots have? Robot enthusiasts say the next frontier after warehouses and factories will be houses and homes. The California robotics firm IX Technologies is taking $20,000 pre-orders for its Neo robots, with expected delivery next year. The 5'6" humanoids, which currently require remote human operators to joystick them around, but will eventually be autonomous, will not just clean toilets and load dishwashers. They will also be able to share jokes and engage in lively natural conversation, says the firm. CEO Bernd Bornick believes users will rely on them for both cleaning and companionship. I don't think it's another person, and it's not a pet. It's something else. Will we all be out of work? There's no question robots will take away some jobs, but the net effect is a matter of debate. Tech CEOs are quick to say that, in fact, new higher-skilled jobs will be created, like the position of robot wrangler, and that robots will largely fill dull jobs that most people don't want. The bots unloading DHS trucks, for example, do the most hated jobs in a warehouse, said Max Thierman of Boston Dynamics. But some scientists say the robot revolution is still far off because the machines still have significant physical limitations. Those who think Android plumbers and cooks will soon proliferate should reset their expectations, said Ken Goldberg, a roboticist at University of California, Berkeley. For one thing, it's proved very hard to endow them with the dexterity to manipulate objects, such as pick up a wine glass or change a light bulb. No robot can do that. But are those breakthroughs coming? Robot evangelists say yes. They say robots are learning so quickly that their advent will inevitably lead to labor market upheaval. Kevin, a 27-year-old who helps train AI robots to fold clothes in India, says the humanoids are not perfect. Sometimes the robot's arms throw the clothes, he says. Sometimes it scatters the stack. But he says they're improving to the point where soon they'll be able to do all the jobs and there will be none left for us. Anticipating pushback over mass layoffs, Amazon is reporting developing plans to mitigate the fallout through community outreach, and other companies are commissioning studies on possible impacts. We are basically going to live in a world where any physical labor is a choice, says Brett Adcock, CEO of Figure AI. Sending robots to school. Before they can clean houses or staff nursing homes, robots have to master human movements and independent navigation of physical environments. They're acquiring these skills in training centers, and China is leading the way. Chinese facilities include a 108,000 square foot center in Beijing that has simulations of settings, including a factory floor, a retail store, and an elder care center. There, operators guide robots through mundane tasks such as opening doors and making sandwiches, harvesting reams of data that can be used for further training. In other countries where labor is cheap, human workers at arm farms are paid to perform menial tasks while wearing cameras and sensors that capture their actions. Yao Meng Qing of the Shanghai robot firm Agipot says the potential is limitless. Just imagine, he said, one day in our own robot factory, our robots will assemble themselves. All right, moving on in the news section to best columns from the United States. Headline, Trump's Consolation Peace Prize. This is written by Nancy Armour in the newspaper USA Today. President Trump better cherish the made-up, not-to-be-taken-seriously-at-all Peace Prize awarded to him recently by FIFA, said Nancy Armour, because it's the only one he's going to get. FIFA, Soccer's U.S., and FIFA President Gianni Infantino has been fawning over Trump to ensure federal subsidies, security measures, and other support. He knows how badly Trump craves a Nobel Peace Prize. So he created a bogus prize, telling a beaming Trump he earned it for his exceptional and extraordinary actions to promote peace and unity around the world. Peace? Unity? Trump is the most divisive person on the planet, who may have committed war crimes in bombing boats in the Caribbean, caused hundreds of thousands of deaths by cutting U.S. food and medical aid to Africa and Asia, and unleashed an army of masked federal agents to terrorize immigrants in pursuit of a racially pure vision of America. There are no Trump sycophants on the Nobel Committee in Norway, and they will not ignore his debasement of American ideals. So this worthless prize will have to do. Next headline, the lie that poor kids can't learn. This was written by Jonathan Shaft in the publication titled The Atlantic. Why are leftists so pessimistic about school reform? Asked Jonathan Chait. Whenever a city or state discovers a new or better way to educate poor children, Progressives and teachers' unions insist that even attempting to shrink the gap between rich and poor students is a fool's errand. This phenomenon recently on display in Mississippi, where new teacher training, rigorous testing, and switching to phonics-based reading instruction produced startling improvements. Over a decade, the state's fourth grade reading scores rose from 49th to the top 20. And Mississippi now does a far better job of teaching literacy than do many northern states. The education establishment responded, as it does with all success stories, by falsely claiming Mississippi's progress was caused by statistical manipulation. In progressive ideology, schools cannot be expected to overcome poverty and inequality. Teachers' unions embrace this belief because they loathe accountability for low-performing teachers. But urban public charter schools regularly outperform traditional public schools, and districts that adopt rigorous testing and accountability see steady improvement. Democrats should not reject the hard work of lifting up educational opportunities for poor kids. And the next headline, the Groypers appeal to young men. This was written by Molly Olmsted in the publications titled Slate. The Groypers are no longer on the fringe, said Molly Olmsted, and they are successfully recruiting teenage boys. The term refers to very online young males who adopt the misogynistic, racist, and anti-Semitic worldview of far-right activist Nick Fuentes, who was recently respectfully interviewed by influential podcaster Tucker Carlson. Even before Carlson gave Fuentes a major platform, parents and teachers have seen this radical ideology gaining a growing foothold. Groyperism appeals mostly to socially awkward young men who are searching for scapegoats for their frustrations. One 10th grade teacher in Central Florida told me that more than 40% of the boys now mimic Fuentes' style bigotry, saying girls have no value other than for sex, claiming slavery wasn't so bad, denigrating Jews, and making Nazi salutes. Fuentes has more than 1 million followers on Elon Musk's X, and his podcasts get hundreds of thousands of views. Emboldened by the right's anti-cancel culture campaign, Groyperism has been free to tear through adolescent internet culture. Social media leads them further and further toward dark places. Beware, the far right is coming for your son. And we'll finish off this best column section with a small item titled Viewpoint. This was written by Thomas Dichter in the publication called The Dispatch. Virtually everyone in the U.S. today knows someone, has hired someone, or works with someone who is an immigrant, or has someone in his or her family who is or was an immigrant, including President Trump's mother and his first and third wives. Every day, native-born Americans see that the majority of people who fill in potholes, do construction work, landscape, mow lawns, and paint houses tend to be immigrants. A glance at their work at 7 a.m. in the cold and the rain shows that they are hard workers. Daily observations and experiences like these explain why nearly 80% of Americans say immigration is a good thing for America. All right. Let's move now to the section. Called the best columns from the world of business. Headline, pumping gas doesn't equal cheaper cars. This was written by Liam Durning in the publication called Bloomberg. Allowing Detroit-made vehicles to guzzle more gas won't help the cost-of-living crisis, said Lamb Dinning. At a White House event recently, President Trump, surrounded by automotive executives, announced the rollback of fuel efficiency and tailpipe emission rules that had been set by the Biden administration. Trump claims that Americans will save $109 billion now that new cars won't have to hit the Biden-desired 50 miles per gallon mark on average by 2031. But that is a gross figure. The net benefit, accounting for higher fuel bills and thirstier vehicles, is about $24 billion, or $181 per family spread over 5 years. Some bargain. This analysis also ignores the reality of why vehicle prices are high in the first place. Average car costs have surged to more than $50,000, largely because of pandemic-era supply chain disruptions, not because of engine rules. The supply crisis gave automakers a taste of what selling fewer vehicles at much higher prices could do for earnings. Relaxing mileage standards will only spur Detroit to sell more of the higher margin, lower fuel economy trucks and SUVs at the core of its business model, encouraging gas vehicles as a favor to automakers, offering the damage done to Detroit's profits by Trump's other observation, tariffs. All right. That concludes our coverage of the week's issue of December 19th, 2025. We will now move on to the December 26th, 2025 issue of the week magazine. We'll start with the main stories and how they were covered. Headline: Trump lashes out at Reiner after director's murder. What happened? President Trump recently doubled down on his denigrating comments about Rob Reiner, calling the acclaimed director, who was murdered at his Los Angeles home with his wife, Michelle Singer Reiner, very bad for our country. The Reiner's son, Nick, age 32, was arrested and charged with murdering his parents, who had been open about their family's years-long struggle with Nick's drug addiction. Reiner, who directed beloved films such as Stand By Me, When Harry Met Sally, and A Few Good Men, also directed the 2015 film titled Being Charlie, co-written by his son Nick, that dramatized his son's challenges. The night before the killings, the Reiners attended a holiday party at Conan O'Brien's house, where witnesses said Nick argued with his father, age 78, and alarmed other guests with his behavior. Hours after the couple were found stabbed to death at their home recently, Trump posted online that Reiner, a liberal activist and fierce critic of the president, was a tortured and struggling but once very talented movie director and comedy star, and suggested his death was the result of his Trump derangement syndrome. Trump added that Reiner was known to have driven people crazy by his raging obsession of President Donald J. Trump. His words drew bipartisan condemnation. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican from Georgia, said that Reiner's deaths were a family tragedy that should be met with empathy. And Representative Thomas Massey, a Republican from Kentucky, called Trump's comments inappropriate and disrespectful. But Trump offered no apology, declaring in the Oval Office that he was not a fan of Rob Reiner at all. What the columnist said: Reiner's beloved films are a shared cultural space, said John Dickerson in The Atlantic. Even if people disagreed with the director's liberal politics, they have lived in the worlds he created on screen. His tragic death should have been a time for Americans to unite around common shock, common vulnerability. But in attempting to desecrate Reiner's legacy, Trump eroded the conditions that make shared meaning possible. That's what happens when a hateful, raging lunatic with all the empathy of Jeffrey Dahmer is in the Oval Office, said Jim Girardi in the National Review. Setting aside political differences for a half minute to express some sadness about a bloody murder should be one of the easiest tasks a president can undertake. But Trump, who cares only whether someone offered him praise or criticism, seems incapable of that. It seems some of his supporters are growing tired of the hate, said Karen Tumultrie and Sabrina Rodriguez in the Washington Post. That he faced actual blowback from figures on the right who normally stay silent could be a sign that his powers are waning. Maybe, said Brett Stevens in the New York Times, but the damage is already done. Trump's policies can be repealed or rewritten, but it's unclear whether the U.S. can ever recover the moral standards he has debased or the manners that he has barbarized. America is a train coming off the rails, led by a driver whose own derangement was again laid bare in that contemptible assault on the Reiners. All right, let's move on to the world at a glance. All right, this short article is from London. Headline, Trump sues the BBC. President Trump filed a $10 billion defamation lawsuit against the BBC recently, accusing the British national broadcaster of editing a speech he gave on January 6, 2021, to make it appear as though he told supporters to attack the U.S. Capitol. The BBC pushed out top two executives recently after an internal review concluded its Panorama TV program had unfairly spliced two clips. One of Trump urging people to the Capitol and the other telling them to fight like hell that occurred 54 minutes apart. The lawsuit filed in Miami after the deadline expired in the United Kingdom is Trump's latest demand for massive payouts from media outlets that he says are biased against him. The network apologized but said there was no basis for a defamation claim. This article comes from Caracas. Headline, U.S. targets oil. President Trump declared the government of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro a foreign terrorist organization recently and ordered a total and complete blockade to prevent sanctioned oil tankers from docking at or leaving Venezuela. It was a major escalation of his campaign to oust Maduro, which of course has now already occurred. But this article was printed a couple of weeks ago. Venezuela is completely surrounded by the largest armada ever assembled in the history of South America, Trump wrote on Truth Social. It will only get bigger, and the shock to them will be like nothing they have ever seen before. Until such time as they return to the United States of America, all of the oil, land, and other assets that they previously stole from us, Trump appeared to be referring to the U.S. oil facilities seized by Maduro's predecessor, Hugo Chavez. The blockade could cripple Venezuela's economy, which depends on shipping oil to China despite the sanctions. The U.S. seized a tanker leaving Venezuela recently, which Venezuelan authorities say is proof that Trump wants to topple Maduro so the U.S. can access the country's massive and mostly untapped oil reserves. Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corneras Machado has made it clear her country would be open to U.S. investment, a $1.7 trillion opportunity, once the Maduro regime leaves power. Speaking from Ohio recently, where she traveled in secret to accept the Nobel Peace Prize, she told CBS's Face the Nation that she fully supported President Trump's actions. "We, the Venezuelan people, are very grateful to him and to his administration because I believe he is a champion of freedom in this hemisphere." All right, let's move on to an article from Berlin. Headline, Progress on Ukraine. After meeting in Berlin recently, Ukrainian, U.S., and European negotiators said they were close to hammering out a joint proposal to end the nearly four-year Russian war in Ukraine. The deal would see a European-led military force, supported by the U.S., which presumably means U.S. intelligence assistance, but no American troops, serving as peacekeepers inside Ukraine. President Volodymyr Zelensky said Ukraine was willing to abandon pursuit of NATO membership because the U.S. said it would give security guarantees that are equivalent to Article 5 of the NATO partners. But sticking points remain, including where to draw the Ukrainian-Russian border in the east, where Russia has conquered large swaths of territory. And of course, Russia has yet to agree to any part of this proposal. All right, let's move to Beijing. Headline, billionaires targeted by U.S. bill. Several Chinese billionaires have responded defiantly to a brewing U.S. crackdown on foreigners using American surrogates to have native-born U.S. children, sometimes dozens of children. The Wall Street Journal reported recently Senator Rick Scott, a Republican from Florida, proposed a bill recently to ban the use of surrogacy by foreigners from certain countries, including China, where surrogacy is illegal. Within days, an account linked to Zhang Bo, a gaming billionaire who says he wants 50 high-quality sons to inherit his business empire, posted a video showing a dozen toddlers running toward the camera, shouting, "Daddy!" IVF clinics say wealthy foreigners have been paying millions of dollars to have multiple American babies. Surrogacy lawyer Amanda Trexler said one hopeful Chinese parent planned 8 to 10 surrogacies and requested a discount. "No," she said, "we are not Costco." All right, let's move now to Jerusalem. Headline, rebuked by Trump. President Trump recently reportedly sent Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu a stern warning to stop violating the Gaza ceasefire after Israel killed a top Hamas military commander. Publicly, Trump said he was looking into validation of the deal. Privately, White House envoy Steve Witkoff said Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, let Netanyahu know the president was angry that Netanyahu was derailing what Trump called my deal to end the fighting and rebuild the devastated Palestinian territory. The Wall Street Journal and Axios reported. Israel responded by saying it was forced to strike because Hamas leaders refuse to disarm. Phase two of the U.S.-backed peace plan calls for an international force to take charge of Gaza security, but it can't deploy unless Hamas has given up its weapons. All right, let's move now to the section called the best columns in the United States. Headline, ICE's Barbaric War on Mothers. This was written by Mona Charon in The Bulwark. The things that are being done by our government to our fellow human beings are monstrous, said Mona Charon. When its mass deportation program began, the Trump administration told the public it would target the worst of the worst, rapists, savages, monsters. But new reports by human rights advocates say that to fill their quotas, ICE and Border Patrol agents have arrested hundreds of pregnant, nursing, and postpartum women. These women are grabbed from their cars or workplaces by masked agents, hustled into buses or cars, and whisked to overcrowded centers where they are denied medical care and even water. Some sleep on concrete floors. In one Louisiana facility, at least 14 pregnant women were visible. Detained mothers have seen their milk dry up due to poor nutrition. Others were frantic about the children they'd been forced to leave behind. One mother was arrested as she was on her way to pick up her special needs child from school. Another was separated from her two-month-old baby. These are not criminals or gang members. They are house cleaners, restaurant workers, and stay-at-home moms. As government thugs pull frantic moms from the arms of their hysterical children, do you now feel safer? And the last article we will cover is titled A Major Mistake on Marijuana. This was written by Alyssa Finley in the Wall Street Journal. Is the Trump administration signaling that MAHA actually stands for Make America High Again? Asked Alicia Finley. It sure looks that way. President Trump has indicated he will order federal officials to reclassify marijuana, now a Schedule I drug, as a Schedule III drug, which would put it in the same class as Tylenol with codeine, anabolic steroids, and other less harmful drugs with medicinal applications. The reclassification could make it easier to ship cannabis across state lines and obtain the drug with a prescription in every state. But a growing mountain of evidence shows that weed's easy availability in two dozen states has made young people sicker and dumber. The psychoactive compound THC binds to brain receptors, and regular users show marked deterioration in executive function, decision-making, coordination, memory, and emotion. Studies show weed actually increases anxiety and depression. Teenage brains are especially vulnerable to the drug's ill effects, which include a much higher incidence of psychosis. Cannabis users under age 50 are 6 times as likely to suffer a heart attack as non-users. A generation of stoners is sapping American economic and cultural vitality. Why make this pernicious drug even easier to get? And we will end our coverage of the week at this point. I need to remind you that you've been listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Again, my name is Nancy Porter, and it has been my pleasure to share The Week magazine with you.